Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. From Ketchikan, Alaska to Brattleboro, Vermont, young people are rising to demand justice for George Floyd and to stand against police brutality. The Associated Press spoke with William Ray and Christine Onhazua at the Minnesota Capitol Youth Protest on Tuesday.
I see you, love everyone.
America was built off the slaves of my ancestors. My grandmother in her hometown and my grandfather were both civil rights activists and both Black Panthers, so I understand what, you know, needs to be done, and, you know, growing up with them and seeing the change that they brought to the community. People are just getting tired of it. I'm tired of just the way it's being treated. But one thing I really enjoy about this crowd is it's diverse, especially like all the other protests have been super diverse, so it's every single nationality, every single ethnicity coming out here to show support to the Black community.
I think a lot of white people are seeing what's going on in the news, and it's really forcing a lot of them to, like, come out in the streets. It's just been, like, an endless cascade of, like, hashtags of Black people dying, and it feels like nothing's really being done by our political leaders to, like, actually enact, like, real change to that. I live in the state, it's really painful to see what's going on, but it's also really important to understand that it's definitely connected to a system of racial violence.
I understand what needs to be done. I understand, like, only change will happen from the bottom up. And you can't depend on a president or, you know, a governor or even a mayor to make the change themselves. You need to bring it up to them and make sure they understand.
Those are the voices of William Ray and Christine Onhazua at a Minnesota Capitol youth protest on Tuesday. That's from the Associated Press. News 3 Now spoke with Jahari Wea, Daniel Milkey, and Jada Sales at another youth-led demonstration at Minnesota's Capitol just yesterday.
Our elders, we're carrying the torch now. You know, they had to go through slavery. They had to go through segregation. They had to go through the civil rights movement. And now it's time for us to make some real change, to really break through those barriers.
People are tired of living in fear. People are tired of feeling like anything could happen to them at any given moment, and there's no proof or, like, no evidence telling that, you know, justice will be served after.
The list of names they're here for pushes them forward.
I'm doing it for Tony. I'm doing it for George Floyd. I'm doing it for Ahmaud Arbery. I'm doing it for Breonna Taylor. That's who we're doing it for, because it could be any one of us, any day. Our brothers, like she said, our sisters, our cousins, our friends. Somebody got to care.
That is Jahari Wea, Daniel Milkey, and Jada Sales at a youth-led demonstration at Minnesota's Capitol yesterday. And thanks to News 3 Now for that clip. Here in the Bay Area, thousands of youth are taking to the streets in cities like San Jose, Vallejo, Fremont, and Marin City. On Monday, over 15,000 people showed up outside Oakland Technical High School. The protest was led by two students who grew up in Oakland, and we'll speak with them a little later in the show. Yesterday, over 10,000 people, but some now say about 30,000, showed up for a youth-led protest in San Francisco's Mission District. Joining us to talk about that is Julian Mark, a journalist who covered that protest. He is a reporter with Mission Local. Last night, he was detained and released. On Twitter, he reported that 20 peaceful protesters were on their way to the police station, including a 14-year-old boy. Hi, Julian. Thank you for joining us.
Hi, Rose. Thanks for having me.
Well, I first want to just talk about the massive numbers. If you saw the video from the sky, I believe it was ABC that was showing the video, the protest just went on for blocks and blocks. Can you just talk about how huge this was?
Yeah, I mean, it was overwhelming. For the first part of the protest, I was reporting from the office with several of our reporters out there, and they were sending pictures back to me. I did not anticipate it would be this large, and when they did show the just the ocean of people and protesters, peaceful protesters, I was truly blown away. And in fact, I thought that it was going to be a simple march from Mission High to the Mission Police Station at 17th and Valencia, and I believe it was probably likely that the crowd just expanded to that point, by merit of its growth.
Right, really incredible. Initially, the numbers said 10,000, but we're now reading some estimates say even more than 30,000 showed up.
Yeah, you know, we reported 10,000 early on, I think watching some videos about the march down 16th Street, it seemed to go on for 30 minutes, maybe even an hour, just a strong flow of people, and I think that's just a lot of people. It was more people than I've ever seen covering a protest.
Wow. What were people talking about, Julian? What were some of the messages that you heard from people?
Well, I heard that people are really just are frustrated. They're frustrated with policing in general, and not, you know, of course, you know, shocking videos like the George Floyd video, which is, you know, I mean, just it does get people out of their chairs. But really, you know, you hear about the day-to-day interactions of unfair policing, and I think that this is the this is something, especially for people of color in San Francisco and elsewhere in the country, you know, it's something that, you know, continues to grate on them, you know, after a while, the constant fear of being unfairly treated by police. And so things, of course, come to a head with a shocking and moving video, like the George Floyd video.
Right. And yesterday we got news that Attorney General Keith Ellison increased the murder charge against former Minneapolis police officer Derek Chauvin, also filed charges against the three other officers who were at the scene of George Floyd's killing and didn't do anything to stop it. Of course, they're now all former officers. Were people talking about that at all yesterday?
You know, I think more people, even though that the most common chant was, you know, say his name, George Floyd, you know, most people, you know, we're talking about the SFPD. And I think that, you know, while this is a, you know, at least those who I encountered, while this, you know, movement was sparked by, you know, what happened in Minneapolis, I think really, you know, this was about what we experience here.
Well, to that point, there's a photo going around on social media. You posted about this. The San Francisco Examiner had a piece on May 30th by Michael Barba. Video surfaces amid George Floyd death fallout showing SF police kneeling on man's neck. It's newly surfaced cell phone video. It shows a San Francisco police officer pressing her knee into the neck of a man like the Minneapolis officer who now faces a murder charge. The person is 19-year-old Kajon Busby. His face is on the ground while three officers detained him. So to your point, I mean, there's so much of this. There's another story about a man in Vallejo who was shot.
Yeah, that story has been on my mind. The young man in Vallejo, that's been on my mind this morning. And to the point of the story that Michael Barba wrote at the Examiner, I think that, you know, these incidents are, you know, of course, you know, this incident is terrible that, you know, it's caught on video. But, you know, if you look at the SFPD's own use of force numbers that it reports, you know, African American men are just by far and away disproportionately policed in San Francisco. And what I mean by policed is stopped, you know, either by car or on the street, searched, and used force upon, or, you know, are on the receiving end of the SFPD's use of force.
Let's spend a little bit of time talking about these youth-led protests. And just like we said, they're huge. We've been reading about 17-year-old Simone Jacques, who was one of the organizers. She and her friends organized the demonstration through an Instagram group called No Justice, No Peace. It has about 10,000 followers. Can you just tell us more about this, how these massive youth-led protests are being organized?
You know, well, I actually, I didn't do a deep dive on how this was organized, and from the Mission District activists that I spoke to, people who are part of the old guard, really this happened, you know, very much as I think they wanted it to be anonymous. I think they didn't it really wasn't about them. And I think that, you know, a lot of, you know, there, from what I hear, there can be a tendency now, you know, in activism, just in San Francisco in general, to brand oneself and to, you know, say you're associated with an organization and put a logo on it. And from what I hear, you know, it was refreshing for a lot of even old school activists in the mission here to see that this was, you know, done, you know, with the intent of being anonymous. And so I think that, you know, early, you know, after, you know, for a week or so, you know, this was circulating on Instagram and people were trying to figure out who it was, but really it just didn't matter. I think people, you know, I think the message really carried what happened.
I think it's also important just to talk about the fact that this is happening all over the country. We spoke a couple days ago about how I've never even heard of some of these cities where people are protesting in Texas and Kansas. I mean, all over the country. There's a Wikipedia page that is listing the cities. The New York Times says over 140 cities. And I think it's important to really focus on that because it's easy to spend most of the time talking about police arrests, violence. And just, can you talk more just about what you saw yesterday, the families, the diversity, the energy on the streets?
Yeah, I mean, it was really actually incredible. I mean, there were people out there that would not ordinarily be out there. And there were, you know, the old people clapping for the young people and vice versa. And, you know, there were allies seem to come out. And, you know, I'm not sure if, you know, I think a point was raised yesterday, you know, that maybe this is because people have just been in their homes, you know, for quite a while. And they, you know, they have the time and they don't have, you know, they don't have the, you know, the jobs to go back to as much, I guess, you know, so that they have the time to do this. But I think the confluence of all of this, you know, frustration, I think it really, you know, came out yesterday. And so I just saw a lot. I mean, really what I saw was just a lot of people and a lot of people that, you know, I from covering protests in the mission, especially even after, you know, terrible police shootings, you know, here locally, it was just people came from all over, you know, people who I'd never seen.
And before we let you go, I do have to ask you about what happened at night. You tweeted that you were detained and then released. You said there were 20 peaceful protesters on their way to the police station, including a 14-year-old boy.
So as I was, I followed the march, from Mission and 16th to the Hall of Justice, to City Hall, and back to the Mission again. And by the time it was going down Valencia Street, things were thinning out. There were quite a few police officers waiting for protesters as they reached Mission Station, probably around 10:15. And then it was thinning out, and I really thought that, you know, the SPD would have done, the wise thing and just let things dissipate. But I kind of called it quits and went to my office to write the last of my post. And then I see, a phalanx of officers, going northbound on Mission, and they were cornering probably a dozen. Maybe it wasn't even 20. It was between a dozen and 20 protesters, and I went to cover it because, you know, I thought it was important to do that. As I was getting into the fray, I flashed my press badge with my camera on, and I was swept up, and they essentially shoved me in with the rest of them, even though I notified that I was press. And a lot of them, I didn't know what they were doing before they got there, but a lot of them did not seem like people that would be doing bad things.
Well, thank you so much for joining us, and thank you for your reporting, Julian.
Thank you for having me.
Julian Mark is a journalist who covered yesterday's protest for Mission Local. Yesterday, in the beginning of the protest, we had estimates of about 10,000 people, but as the day went on, a number of estimates came out that about 30,000 people showed up. It was just a massive protest. And you can see Mission Local's photos and reporters' dispatches at yourcallradio.org. Now I would like to welcome Jacqueline Azaw to the show. Jacqueline is a 19-year-old junior from Mountain House, California. Jacqueline attends the HBCU Clark Atlanta University. Jacqueline attended the student organized march for George Floyd in Oakland on Monday, where between 10 and 15,000 people showed up. She also spoke at that rally. Hi, Jacqueline. Thanks so much for joining us.
Hi. Thank you so much for having me.
Did I say your last name right? Is it Azaw?
Yes.
Okay, good. Thank you so much. So, Jacqueline, why don't you talk about your experience in Oakland? Again, numbers say 10 to 15,000. It was a massive, massive rally.
It was surreal. Like looking into the crowd, you just see a whole bunch of different faces. Like you see white, black, Asian, Hispanic, Native. And what was even more amazing was that there was not an inch or even a smidgen of violence anywhere throughout the entire thing. It was 100% peaceful and 100% student-led. So I would say it was really successful, and it was such an amazing thing to see in the Bay Area.
What does solidarity mean like to you, Jacqueline? Because it has been amazing watching protests in fairly white cities across the country with a lot of, you know, white young people, people of all ages coming out and yelling over and over again, Black Lives Matter. What has that been like for you to see that?
It's been, like I said before, it's been so amazing because I know a lot of other Black activists have been talking about this since we were like eighth graders, freshmen in high school, and everybody, it wasn't like popular back then to be like into this type of stuff. And we often felt like we were ignored and nobody really cared about us. So for us to be up there speaking and to see the crowd, it was a moment where I had to collect myself and not bawl, like start bawling tears, because it was like we were finally being held, and the solidarity of everybody coming together meant so much to everybody who was helping to organize, and even like for Black people all across America.
It also just speaks to the power of social movements and the importance of continuing to do this work. As you said, when you were in eighth or ninth grade, when you felt like you were kind of doing it alone, and now look where you are right now. You're 19. So how old are you in eighth or ninth? Like 13, I think, if I can remember correctly.
About six.
So about 6 years ago, and just the change that you've seen in that time.
It's incredibly monumental. I'm happy that America is finally waking up. And one thing I want to reiterate is I see a lot of, especially white people, saying, I can't believe this is happening. I can't believe they did that. But one thing I need to stress out is that they're lucky that they had a camera that time. This has been going on in our neighborhoods for hundreds of years. Police brutality is not a new phenomenon. It's just the fact that now we have cameras to document it.
Exactly. And how do you feel about the video? Someone on MSNBC, I think it was Jelani Cobb from The New Yorker, he said it's really a conundrum because it's so traumatic to see this video shared over and over on social media. At the same time, we need these videos.
Yeah, definitely. We do. We definitely do need these videos. It makes me think back to like slavery times, to where it's hard to see that. It's hard to see that. But it's essential that we don't censor the gravity of the Black plight in America. Just because you're uncomfortable doesn't mean that it shouldn't be shared. Uncomfortability is the root of where change comes from. So I definitely feel like, although it is traumatic, and although there needs to be the proper trigger warnings when it's shared and to warn people, it does need to be shared.
Can you talk about what it has been like for you? I mean, we interviewed a 71-year-old activist the other day. I mean, it was amazing to hear his stories. You know, the first time he went to vote, he couldn't because of the color of his skin. And he had to wait another 4 years before he could vote. And he's still involved. He's now a professor. And I just asked him over the years what has kept him going. As a 19-year-old, what are your thoughts about social movements and I mean, you were involved at a very young age, but what it will take to, you know, stay involved in the movement?
For me, I don't, my role in activism doesn't require any incentives, because after the tweet is sent, after the protest is over, after the crowd is cheering, after all the, as everybody calls it, clout, like the popularity of being up there, and I go back we go back to our neighborhood, and it's the reality that we're living. So it's me fighting for my life constantly.
What have you learned in school about social movements and the history of this country?
Oh, I go to a historically black college, Clark Atlanta University in Atlanta, Georgia, and it's been the best decision I have ever made. It's actually on the street, Atlanta Student Movement, and it's in the Atlanta University Center with Morehouse College and Spelman College, where Toni Morrison went, Martin Luther King Jr. went, W.E.B. Du Bois taught in my school. So I get to study and learn every single day and walk to class on the very streets that our predecessors walked. So it's amazing to be able to go to our library and see all the paintings and all the archives. And I've learned so much. I've learned that, for one, especially with everything going on, that there has not been a single right or privilege that we have learned in this, that we have earned in this country without protest, without uproar, without change, without demanding it. And for the first time ever, all 50 states will protest at the same time. And I just see so much change on the horizon that I don't even know how to, like, it's so humanly possible to express it.
Wow, that must be amazing, Jacqueline, to go to a school where your story is actually told, because that definitely did not happen in my experience.
Yeah, definitely. It didn't happen in my high school experience either. I went to a high school that didn't have that many black people in the high school. We didn't really even learn about Black Wall Street, where black people came together and built their own. Because one consensus I see from racists is that, why don't you build your own stuff or go back to your own country? We've tried. We've tried so many times, and ships were burned, cities were burned, people were lynched. Outward racism was shifted into dog whistle politics and institutionalized racism, such as medical industry racism, redlining, different coded wording, to where they would be able to shift the blame onto our people instead of onto the system.
That is Jacqueline Azaw, a 19-year-old junior from Mountain House, California. She attends the HBCU Clark Atlanta University. Jacqueline attended the student-organized march for George Floyd in Oakland on Monday, where she also spoke. If you have any questions for Jacqueline, and we're going to be introducing another guest, we'd love to hear from you. What are your thoughts about the youth-led protests that you're seeing in almost every state across the country? These are so diverse. So many young people are taking to the streets to express solidarity and to express themselves. What are your thoughts on what you're seeing? If you're a young person and you've been taking to the streets, we'd love to hear from you. Or if you've been doing this for a while and you'd like to talk with our young activists today, give us a call at 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. You can also email yourcall@kalw.org or tweet us at yourcallradio. You know, we should also say that these protests are happening day after day after day. I mean, it has been over a week, and so many young people say, we are going to stay on the streets. Now I would like to welcome Xavier Brown to the show. Xavier helped organize the youth-led protest in Oakland on Monday, where about 15,000 people showed up. Xavier just finished his freshman year at UCLA. Hi, Xavier. Thanks so much for joining us.
Hi. How are you?
Hanging in there. Thank you. I want to ask you the same question I just asked Jacqueline. She was talking about what an amazing experience it has been at the HBCU Clark Atlanta University. And I just wonder, at UCLA, what is your curriculum like in terms of learning about Black history and the real history of this country?
Yeah, so I'll have to say, in general, my experience at UCLA is interesting, because at UCLA there's only about four a percent of black people that go there. So the black community there is very close and very tight knit. So we try to educate, you know, everyone in any way possible on our own history. I have taken a class on African American history in the U.S. and it's been, you know, eye opening. You know, like, it's been great. And they know how to teach the subject, but you know, now I want them to accept more, you know, accept more black students into the program. But yeah.
What are the conversations around this issue to pressure the school and demand that they accept more black students?
Well, I mean, the thing is that honestly, it just goes back to where people were raised. You know, like, you have to realize that a lot of these black kids in these communities are going to poorly funded schools, mm-hmm. where they can't get the same education as maybe white kids or Asian kids, because they're in, you know, they're usually in richer neighborhoods, so they don't have the same resources. So I think that that's where it starts, you know. So
yeah, it's such a good point. And a lot of people are wondering how they can get involved. One way is Students Rising Above is a mentor program. They work with low-income students all the way through high school, maybe even sooner, and then through college to make sure that, you know, they have what they need and they just have someone to talk to about these issues. A lot of the students have been homeless. You know, a lot of the students, in fact, all of them are first generation. Yeah. So, you know, if it's really important to connect with these kinds of organizations and make sure they have the resources they need.
Of course, of course.
Yeah. Well, we're going to take a quick break. Today we are talking about the youth-led protests that are happening in almost every state across the country. It's really been incredible to watch. We're joined now by Xavier Brown, who helped organize the youth-led protest in Oakland on Monday. Xavier just finished his freshman year at UCLA. Jacqueline Azaw is a 19-year-old junior who is going to the HBCU Clark Atlanta University. She's from Mountain House, California, and she spoke at the march in Oakland on Monday. This is Your Call. We'll be back after this.
This is Your Call on KALW, a show that relies on engaged listeners. You can join today's conversation by calling 866-798-TALK. That's toll-free, 866-798-8255. And you can post a comment or question on the website at yourcallradio.org or tweet us at yourcallradio.
This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Today we are talking about the youth-led massive uprisings across the country. If you'd like to join us, if you took to the streets as a young person, we'd love to hear from you. Or if you've been doing this for a while and you have any comments for our guests, the toll-free number is 866-798-8255. You can also email yourcall@kalw.org. Today we're joined by Jacqueline Azaw, a 19-year-old junior at the HBCU Clark Atlanta University. Jacqueline is from Mountain House, California, and she spoke at the student-organized March for George Floyd in Oakland on Monday. Xavier Brown just finished his freshman year at UCLA. He helped organize the youth-led protest also on Monday, where about 15,000 people showed up. I have to say, Xavier, we just looked up the population at UCLA for the undergrads, almost 30% white, 25% Asian, 19% Hispanic or Latino. Like you said, 3% black or African American, and then Native American, 0.2%, and that's Native American or Alaska Native. So, yeah, these numbers really need to change and improve.
Right. Yeah.
You just gave us another good show idea, so thank you for bringing that up. Before we get to calls, Xavier, what was your experience like at the rally on Monday? And just really overall, what's your experience been like throughout all of this?
I mean, it was truly a blessing to see the community of all ages come out and support one cause. And it was truly emotional to hear the speeches. You know, Jacqueline's speech was very well done, emotional, she really told everyone what was on her mind, and that's all we ever wanted to hear, you know. And I just think that it was great, but I also had to remind myself that it took, you know, the death of someone innocent, you know, someone that did not need to be taken away from us. It took a death at the hand of the police for all of this to happen. So I think that it makes me happy that something positive came out of it, but at the same time, you know, I'm still sad that this had to happen.
Jacqueline, do you want to give us a synopsis of what you spoke about at the rally?
I basically highlighted the role of women, especially Black women, in this movement, because as Malcolm X said, we are the most unprotected and neglected person in America. We often show up for everybody, but nobody shows up for us. Like, so many Black women have gone missing this year and last year, where if you go to all these protests, it's women on the front line. And I basically wanted to highlight Mia Wilson, Breonna Taylor, Sandra Bland, and so many other women who do not get the widespread coverage, who do not get the justice that they serve, that they deserve.
Yeah, it's such an important point. And we're going to do a show next Tuesday about the killing of Breonna Taylor and so many of the other Black women who deserve so much more attention. That's next Tuesday. So I hope you can join us for that. And we still don't have justice for Breonna Taylor. Those officers have not been arrested. We should mention, but we will definitely go over that case on Tuesday's show. We had a caller who dropped. I'm sorry. It took us a while to get to you, Kim. Kim wanted to say that she is a 65-year-old activist and wants to thank you both for carrying the torch. And let's go to another caller, Anonymous in San Francisco. Hi, welcome to the show.
Hi, I'm actually one of the coordinators of yesterday's event. I just wanted to put the word out that we're trying to identify a 14-year-old male that was arrested last night for peacefully protesting, along with about 20 other peaceful protesters, 5 hours before curfew was due to be lifted. We have not heard anything from him or his family or anyone that knows of him or was there with him yesterday. He was one of the first to be carted off to juvie. To learn more and to contact us, please go to the @NoJusticeNoPeaceSF Instagram page. Yeah, just wanted to put the word out.
Thank you for calling. Can I ask you, we had on Julian Mark, a journalist who covered the protest for Mission Local. He was also detained, but he was released. So you're saying that this group of young people have not yet been released and no one has heard from them?
We have not. So we have heard from one person who was released. They have no idea where this young man is. They say that he was the first man or the first person to be carted off and taken to juvie. We are not sure if he has been released yet. We're just trying to figure out. We are covering all legal fees or any legal fees that these people, the people arrested have. So please contact us if you have been arrested or need any help.
I also heard in the video, these young people were all laying on the ground on the sidewalk. Yeah. And I heard them saying, we just want to get home. Isn't this your job to ensure that we peacefully get home?
Yeah, it was a very, honestly, very disgusting, very not fun scene to watch. We were up last night very late trying to identify the people who were arrested. And we have not identified even half of the people arrested. So we're very concerned that a lot of them are still being processed or not released yet.
We'd like to have as much help spreading the word as possible. Thank you. We actually just contacted the DA's office today, this morning. I left a message with the DA, with Chessa. They put me in contact with him, like with his direct line. So I left a message this morning.
Where can people go for more information to keep up with this?
You can go to the @NoJusticeNoPeaceSF Instagram page. That is where we're updating people. We are working on getting some other platforms up because we understand, you know, some people have Twitter, some people have Facebook. So at the moment, we only have an Instagram, and that is @NoJusticeNoPeaceSF.
Okay, thank you so much. We will also put in some calls, and we'll reach out to our journalist colleagues in San Francisco to find out if they have any answers on this. Thank you so much for calling in.
Thank you so much. We really appreciate it. Yes, thank you.
Thank you. Jacqueline or Xavier, do you have any comments on this? These young people being arrested, and now activists say that they haven't heard from them. Especially, I mean, we're talking about a 14-year-old boy. That's pretty concerning.
It's ridiculous. Yeah. Like, even at the Oakland protest we were at, when we were marked, like, 15,000 of us peacefully marching, and then we get a notification that they had a curfew instilled. And before the curfew even, like, happened, like, before the curfew even started, a whole bunch of young people were tear gassed. So there definitely is a culture of injustice when it comes to the Bay Area Police Department.
What would you add, yeah, Xavier?
Yeah, no, adding on to that, you know, one of my largest concerns in terms of organizing it is the fact that as a result, I was putting the safety of myself and the entire, you know, group of protesters on the line, and knowing that a lot of them are youth, you know, that was very scary to think about, that, you know, it could very well be a possibility that these youth could be arrested or assaulted. And I think that it's terrible that that even has to go through my mind. It shouldn't, you know, it shouldn't even be a possibility that could happen.
What has been your overall response to the police violence that we are seeing on the streets? We're going to talk about this more in depth tomorrow. Even assaults on journalists, the Freedom Tracker has documented 125 police assaults on journalists, physical attacks, rubber bullets, pepper spray, or tear gas. Xavier, what are your thoughts on this?
I think it's not very helpful. Like, for example, you know, the a damage being done with these rubber bullets, you know, it's terrifying to see. And I think it's more hurtful than helpful. And you know, a lot of these police have to realize that a lot of parents are bringing their kids out to these protests because they want them to experience, you know, something about, you know, fighting for what you believe in. And when these kids get tear gassed, I mean, you know, like, that's just a terrible sight to see. And I've seen videos of kids getting tear gassed and flashbanged, and you know, it's just morally wrong, you know. It's just morally wrong. So I don't think it's, you know, helpful at all. I think it's harmful.
What would you add, Jacqueline?
First and foremost, I just want to add the necessity and the importance of press during movements right now and in history. The press have been monumental in capturing so many things, and they have a right in this country, freedom of press, to do so. So for press to be attacked, and for our president, our lawmakers, our legislators to not immediately intervene and act on that, is direct violation of their rights and our rights as citizens to know what's going on for people who are immune compromised and can't go out and protest, and have people in their houses who are immune compromised and can't go out and protest during this worldwide pandemic. So I definitely believe it's disgusting, and more needs to happen with that. I don't want to see that brush under the rug.
Sandy writes in and says, what do you think about Trump's use of military to put down peaceful protesters in Washington, D.C.? I mean, that happened just minutes before he decided to walk over to a church, and it was brutal to watch that. I mean, this was during the day. It was peaceful. No one saw this coming. Jacqueline, what's your response to that?
So I was actually following that, and what I noticed is at the same time Trump did his press release, he sent people outside to go tear gas peaceful protesters to avert attention. And I just think that it just is tactical. I don't think anything that Donald Trump is doing is by chance or because he's worried for the police officers or anything. It's very tactical. We've seen even back in January when, or I think it was like March, or don't quote me on this, but when it came out that he was hiding information about COVID-19 to save his own self for re-election, everything that he's doing right now is tactical, including military force against peaceful protesters. You see where he went to the church and held the Bible up. That was a statement. That was not just him standing in solidarity. That was a statement to all his racist, extremist supporters that he continuously over and over again refuses to denounce, that he's still standing with them, and he has not left their side, because they even tear gassed and immediately cleared protesters from the White House so he could walk over there. So I definitely feel like the militarization is resembling one of martial law, which is something that was incredibly scary to even begin talking about. And the over-militarization, the overfunding, the overemphasis on the need for a police department to have rubber bullets, tear gas that was outlawed to even be used overseas in war, and they're using it on 14- and 15-year-olds with no weapons, on their knees, begging you to hear our cries. It's very frustrating.
What would you add, Xavier?
I just wanted to ask if you could repeat the question so I can make sure that I'm saying, exactly what you guys are talking about.
Oh, sure. Sandy writes, what would you say about Trump's use of the military to put down peaceful protests in Washington, D.C.?
Oh, yeah, no, it's overdoing it. It's you're acting like it's a terrorist attack, you know, and I'm sure he, sees it as that way. You know, how can you, as the president of the United States, a country of freedom of speech, freedom of press, how can you allow something along those lines? How can they even cross your mind, And I think that really shows how incompetent Donald Trump, truly is, as not only a leader, a president, but just as a person in general. How can you, use tanks and, armed guards for peaceful protesters? It's ridiculous, and it's a shame, It's a shame on what Americans think America is, because honestly, personally, I've never been proud to be an American, and this is just an example of that,
Xavier Brown helped organize the youth-led protest in Oakland on Monday, where about 15,000 people showed up. He just finished his freshman year at UCLA. Jacqueline Azaw is a junior at the HBCU Clark Atlanta University. She's from Mountain House, California, and she spoke at the rally on Monday. Xavier, I want to ask you about the organizing that went on for this protest. And I want to thank Darwin Bond Graham from Berkeleyside for connecting us with you. He wrote a really great piece, How Oakland Students Got 15,000 People to March Against Police Violence on Monday. He writes that you and your friend Akil Riley, you're both home from college, and you had a phone call last week. You grew up together in Oakland, reeling from the killing of George Floyd, and you both said that you just needed to do something. So can you tell us a little bit about what went on in organizing this huge uprising?
Yeah, no. So pretty much it just began with a text from Akil, and he just said, you know, like, tired of, you know, not doing anything, and I was just pretty much saying, like, dude, like, let's take action, you know, like let's do a march. And we just, you know, he had already made a flyer, so we just posted it to Instagram and tried to share it as much as possible. And I even told him, if it's just me and you, you know, we are still going to march. We're still going to fight for what we believe in. So it was never about, you know, trying to convince other people to join us. You know, we just wanted to have people that, you know, wanted to do the same, because I was tired of seeing a police brutality case turn into another hashtag. And then from then, you know, different organizations and different people began to reach out. Like, for example, Jacqueline reached out, and she was like, hey, you know, let's do some donations. And she handled that perfectly, and she's still handling it. You know, even days after the protest, you know, like, she's still, you know, doing her work and, you know, doing things that she believes in. And honestly, it wouldn't be possible without people like Jacqueline, without people, you know, who reached out, or without people who shared the flyer, you know. Even though it was tiring and exhausting, at least for me, because I'm still in school, you know, it was well worth it. And, you know, we came together as a community to really form something huge.
Yeah, as Darwin writes in his piece, the group Mask Oakland handed out 500 masks. The Common Humanity Collective, a mutual aid group that works with unhoused people, gave out 400 bottles of hand sanitizer. It's just a really amazing piece. I hope you can take the time to read it at yourcallradio.org. And again, thanks, Darwin Bond Graham. Can we have a couple minutes left. Let's talk about some of the systemic change that you both would like to see. We did a show yesterday about what it means to defund police. This is now getting a lot of attention. The Minneapolis school district decided to cut ties. Yesterday, the city of Los Angeles announced plans to decrease funding. I mean, $100 billion is spent on police nationwide across the country. What sort of systemic changes are you calling for, Jacqueline?
First of all, I would like to see more civic involvement in police brutality overview cases. Like, if there could be like a overseas committee of a whole bunch of regular everyday civilians just to oversee that justice is actually being served. I would also like to see the demilitarization of police departments. There should be no reason why LAPD needs $3 billion. For their police department, and only are allocating 3% of their funds to advancing their minority communities. Ridiculous. So I would definitely like to see that happen. And I would also like to see Donald Trump out of the White House as soon as possible, preferably, but I'll take November. And I would also like to see more unity. I would like to see people listening to each other, because there could be no systemic change if we don't listen to each other and hear each other and educate each other. I want our allies to start speaking up in places where they won't, one, get recognition or praise for doing so. Do it in our absence, because in white neighborhoods, the consensus is that they don't even really know why we're angry, what's going on, because it hasn't been their truth. Like, they haven't been able to live it. So if we can get our voices widespread across the nation, and that will transfer to decision tables and eventually transfer onto the law. And to vote, everybody, please vote. Please vote right now.
What about you, Xavier? What would you add?
You know, just apart from one, I just want to emphasize what Jacqueline just said right there. We all have to vote, you know. That's where reform within the system changes. But I think that we need to divert a lot of this funding to different areas, you know, to education, to housing. Like these are some of the ways, you know, including redlining. These are some of the ways that the system has constantly oppressed Black people. And for those who don't know what redlining is, it was a racial discriminatory housing practice that was practiced in during the Great Depression under FDR with the use of the HOLC and the FHA. And pretty much what it did is it denied home loans to, you know, a lot of these Black families and moved a lot of these white families out to the suburbs where they had groceries, a better education, you know, all of these amenities. And for, you know, over 80 years, a lot of Black people have just, you know, been in these terrible situations where they have to go to the liquor store to get the groceries. You know what I mean? So I think it just begins in trying to fund, you know, different parts of these systems. We don't need all of this cash going into army. We don't need all of these things going into the police system. What we need is for all of it to go into these systems that will build up the community and educate the community. But unfortunately, under a capitalist system, they can't have that. They have to have people who are homeless. They have to have people who are, you know, of less advantage, and we have to change that. So I think it just goes hand in hand with everything that America stands for, and I think that we just need to reform the system slowly but surely. But I think revolution, and I think protesting will speed up that process.
Xavier Brown just finished his freshman year at UCLA, and he helped organize the youth-led protest in Oakland on Monday, where almost 15,000 people showed up. It started as a conversation with his friend and blossomed into a massive, beautiful action. Xavier, thank you so much for joining us. We'd love to have you back.
Thank you for having me, of course.
Jacqueline Azaw is a 19-year-old junior who attends the HBCU Clark Atlanta University. She's from Mountain House, California, and she spoke at the student-organized March for George Floyd in Oakland on Monday. Jacqueline, thank you so much for joining us. We'd also love to have you back.
Thank you so much. Just shout out to Xavier and Akil for being amazing organizers. And just to add, we were able to raise over $5,000 for the Anti-Police Terror Oakland Bail Fund and also for the George Floyd Memorial Fund. So thank you to everybody who helped. It meant so much to the Black community.
Well, thank you so much for that. And I should say the memorial service for George Floyd is taking place right now in Minneapolis at North Central University. Thank you for joining us. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's your call.